That's what I enjoy about that aspect of being a seed grower, is you get to see these new varieties before the general public ever does. And you get to find out what their strengths and weaknesses are and how you can incorporate them into your farming business.
Knowledge for Resilience, a cross-commodity podcast brought to you jointly by the Peace River Forage Association, the Peace Region Forage Seed Association, and the BC Grain Producers Association. Welcome to episode 25. I'm your host, Nadia Mori. Today, I'm talking with Dave Wuthrich from PW Farms. PW Farms is located near Cecil Lake, BC, on a beautiful 5,000 cultivated acres. Dave Wuthrich has been involved in the industry for over 30 years. In that time, he has been involved in many aspects of the seed industry, such as being a director for the BC Seed Growers, the BC National Rep for Canadian Seed Growers Association, a Canadian Food Inspection Agency crop inspector, and a Canadian Seed Institute auditor. Some of the seeds grown at PW Farms include pedigreed barley, oats, and peas, and for a while, they also had a seed cleaning plant. So clearly, somebody with a lot of experience in the seed growing industry. So without further ado, let's talk about the art of growing grain seeds. Today, I get to talk to Dave Wuthrich. Welcome to the podcast, Dave.
Hi, thanks for having me.
The thing we would like to talk today about is seed production, and you produce a number of different seeds. If you want to maybe give us a bit of a background about your farming operation and the different types of seeds that you're producing.
Yeah, thank you. We're pedigreed seed growers, select seed growers. So we grow plots, start with the breeder seed and work our way down to certified seed. We've been seed growers for myself over 30 years, and my father was a seed grower before me for about 25 years. So we've been in seed production since 1969, 1970. My wife and I farm in the Cecil Lake area, of just east of Fort St. John, on a 6,000 acre grain, oilseed, and grass seed farm. Our son is currently joining the farm right now. He went to ag school, so he's going to join us on the farm. So we grow pedigreed wheat, barley, oats. We used to do canola, but that's more of a different market nowadays, so we don't do that. And then pedigreed fescue and timothy, and we've done brome and clovers as well.
And it sounds like you always stayed on the farm, or did you have a time where you went off farm and then came back to it?
Yeah, I went to ag school in Fairview for 2 years, got my diploma in agriculture, and then I worked abroad for a year in Australia, worked on a farm down there. Then I came back and started farming, but you know, as most people up in the north here in the wintertime, I would work in the oil patch and did 5 winters in the oil patch and decided that wasn't what I was wanting to do. So I came back and we doubled down on the farm and we've been going ever since.
Now you mentioned you're producing all these different types of seeds, and I imagine there's quite a bit of a difference in how you manage them, how you market them, how you go about processing them afterwards. Do you want to maybe just explain a little bit the differences for somebody who might not be familiar?
So we'll start with the cereals. So the, you know, your wheat, barley, oats. We usually, on our farm, we start with breeder seeds. We'll get 2 or 3 25 kg bags from a university or a private breeding program, and we'll plant breeder seed, and we'll multiply that down for 4 to 5 generations to certified seed. So there's a lot of different field work. You know, I'll need 5 years grain-free on certain land before I can even grow a plot. Everything every year is inspected by used to be CFI inspectors, but now it's gone third party. So I have inspectors come every year. They walk the fields. They check for off types, weeds that might be contaminating the crop, disease, all that kind of thing. And then we get a crop inspection report that says that it's passed or if there's any problems. Another part of that inspection is also your isolation, because with plots, you need 10 meters of isolation between it and any other. So if there's barley beside your barley plot, you got to have 10 meters isolation so they can't cross-pollinate or you can't mechanically mix them up somehow. That gets a little less as the pedigreed status goes down. So when you get down to certified, it's only 3 meters. So we do that for several years. Usually once we get down to registered seed or certified seed, then we will start actively marketing that crop. And that's where, you know, we'll have ads in the paper or just ads up at the seed plant, stuff like that. We get everything tested, you know, for fusarium diseases, like in barley with your smut, and also your germination. That's a big one in seed vigor. That all gets tested, and then we market it and try to sell it to customers in the area. Now, the grass seed is a different animal. Usually, we start with foundation seed with grass seed. We have grown some plots for grass seed for fescue. We did that a few years back, but it's not very common. There's not too many new varieties of grass seed coming along, or really no new varieties. We basically start with foundation seed, and then that seed we produce, same thing, it's inspected, isolation is checked, we harvest it, and then we haul it to forage seed processing plants in the Peace Country, and they basically buy it from there, and they clean it, they condition it, they test it, and then they market it from there. And so once we've sold it to those processors, our part of the pedigreed seed system on grass seed is done, basically.
And then do you also grow after that? Like once it is, say, a certified seed and you're just multiplying seed for consumption, is that something you do as well?
Once we're pedigreed seed, I mean, we try to sell pedigreed seed as much as we can. We can use that. We'll seed our own pedigreed seed and just produce common that goes to the elevators or the feed markets or whatever. So it's our whole farm isn't, that'd be a lot of seed to grow. It always depends on the markets that particular year and conditions as well. If you have a drought, there's not much seed available, or bad harvest conditions where your germination can be affected. So it's a fairly variable market to be in. You know, you have to be a little resilient. It doesn't always work out.
Yeah, along those lines, I could imagine. So if you get these small quantities from, say, a university and you're in the process of multiplying it, there's a lot of things that could happen, right? Like in those 3 to 4 years as you're multiplying it?
2-3 years ago, we had a very bad harvest, and I had 4 breeder seed plots that I didn't combine until the spring. And by then, they were no good anymore. So it's, you know, that was a big loss for us. And a big loss for the breeding, because a lot of times when we're getting breeder seed, they're trying to multiply them. They're not registered yet. So there's a lot of risk on the seed companies as well, too. So that's why they have a plot up here in our area, some in southern Saskatchewan or Alberta. You know, they try to spread it out because there's usually a disaster somewhere. So they have to spread out their risk.
I think it's a good reminder, too, of how involved of a process it is. Like already at the breeding end, it can take quite some time for a new variety to be bred. And then it comes to somebody like yourself who then has to take it from the pedigree to something that you can actually sell, which takes another few years of time. So it's quite amazing when we get those new varieties out.
The one thing most people don't realize is when we choose or we're offered these new varieties, a lot of the time they're just a number. We have one page of data on it, and that's small scale data from their own research programs. We're taking a big leap of faith that this is a variety that customers will actually want. You know, we have gone through the whole process of getting stuff down, growing it for 4 years, and it turns out it's not a good variety, or there's something else better that's come along. And we've done a lot of work for something that's really not wanted in the market. So it's a big risk for us, and it's a big risk for the seed companies. But, you know, we have run into situations before where certain varieties are not a fit in this area or the prairies, vice versa. Some varieties do a lot better in the Peace Country because of our longer hours of daylight and just our different growing conditions. There has been some niche varieties that have just stayed in our area, which did not take hold in the prairies. So it's not always that easy.
So essentially, you have to be really good at picking your horses that you want to bet on in terms of like what you choose to put your time and land mass into for these 3 or 4 years to multiply it.
It is a big challenge. But, you know, it boils down to the relationship you have with the seed companies that we deal with. I mean, we are shareholders in one seed company, and then we've also worked with CCAN as well. and some private breeders, you know, as well, to just help build up their own programs. So it's a challenge, but it's interesting. And that's what I enjoy about that aspect of being a seed grower, is you get to see these new varieties before the general public ever does. And you get to find out what their strengths and weaknesses are, and how you can incorporate them into your farming business.
You mentioned you're getting inspected on an annual basis, you know, to make sure you're compliant with all these requirements of distance and what have you. Do they also take measurements on the performance, or is that something that falls on you to monitor how the variety is doing year to year?
When we do breeder seed plots, we have to give an evaluation of the breeder seed and what we think of that to Canadian seed growers. That's more for their internal information. Usually, once the seed gets down to select or foundation status, we try to get some of that seed into some local trials that the BC grain producers might be putting on, or even just private trials. So we'll put it side to side against some other more common varieties and just have them side by side and have a field day and have customers come out and just have a look for themselves. We try to get some yield data off that if we can. Only if it's a winter, though.
I don't know if you can share this, like, in terms of the number of varieties you've ran through your operation, like, what would sort of be the percentage of those were awesome varieties and they did well versus having a bust variety that never went anywhere?
I'm scared to think about how many didn't pan out. Most of the varieties we tried, especially on the cereals, there's not that many varieties we grow that didn't really pan out. Some that didn't pan out were weather related. They just didn't fit up here. They were like too late maturing. So we'd had to get rid of those. But most of those we would kind of weed out in the first couple of years. And if we did have some higher pedigree seed, then we would just move that to other seed growers in the prairies. So that, you know, the seed was never really lost. You know, there's got to be at least 10-15% of the varieties over the years that just didn't pan out. But like I said before, we have a great relationship with the company that we're shareholder of. So they really do the research and they pick varieties for our area, knowing that they are suited for our area the best. We've always had pretty good luck with the seed varieties we've grown.
We know we have the Peace Region Forage Seed Association, but how about on the grain seed production? Is that a common practice? Are you one of the only ones in the Peace Region? Is it kind of a niche market to be in?
A bit of history for context would be good. British Columbia had their own branch of the Canadian Seed Growers that started back in 1934 in the Creston Valley, actually. So there's always been an active Seed Grower Association in BC. We actually, just last year, we closed down the BC branch of the Canadian Seed Growers and we amalgamated with the Alberta branch. So now it's the Alberta British Columbia Seed Growers. And the reason we did that is, you know, we used to have 60, 70 members in BC and we dwindled down to about 20 members, 25. And half our members were in southern BC, in the Creston Valley, and they were growing grass seed. So we had a very hard time trying to keep the board active and engaged and actually trying to keep the association running. You know, everything has a cost to it, time and money. So it was a big challenge for us. So amalgamating with Alberta gives us better representation on the national stage. I mean, I was also a national director for Canadian Seed Growers. The BC rep for that for 8 years. And I mean, I was actively on the BC Seed Grower Board for 30 years. So it was kind of, once you got on the board, you never got off. And so, you know, up here, there's maybe only 4 or 5 seed growers who will grow cereals. The rest of the seed growers are forage seed producers. And their involvement, as I said earlier, is a lot less involved. So it's just a different type of growing seed.
That makes sense. And thanks for the context. That's really helpful. You mentioned you used to grow oil seeds as well, but, you know, chose to discontinue that. Is it just the marketing aspect you mentioned, or is it other challenges that kind of make it difficult?
We used to grow open pollinated canola seed. But now that everything has gone hybrid production, that pretty much all goes to southern Alberta or South America under irrigation, under very favorable weather growing conditions were just too variable up here. And with the hybrid production, it's just everything has to be perfect because it's really hard to get the amount of seed that they need. And it's just too risky up here. So we just, we slowly got out of that. Not that we chose to get out of the market. That's just the way that the market went. Hybrid production goes to where the best land is under irrigation, and it's the least amount of risk for seed companies.
And I guess comparatively, it's also such an expensive seed that it's that much more risk for everybody involved.
Very expensive seed, and it's always a challenge for us every year when we buy our canola. We're spending a lot of money on canola seed, but every year we line up to buy it again because the hybrid seed just produces much better than the older open pollinated varieties. It's what pays the bills on the farm.
You mentioned our variability in the Peace region and in northern BC in general. Like, do you feel that has gotten more challenging with weather or maybe disease or insects over the time that you and your parents were involved in seed production?
We have the advantage in the BC Peace where we have a certain microclimate, I feel, where a lot of the insect and disease pressures that they have in the prairies, we don't encounter because we're usually cooler nights, we're not as humid, and it's not indicative for insects, for one thing, or even fusarium to really take hold just because of our weather patterns. But our weather patterns are changing. I mean, we've always had the issue up here of, you know, we have a short growing season. We can all seed a crop, but can we get it off? Can we harvest it in time? And I think the farmers who have succeeded, they've geared up their farms accordingly. You know, we have grain dryers, we're over capacity on combines. We are set up to handle tough, damp grain, and we know how to deal with it and spent a lot of money to handle it. You go on the prairies, you don't see many farmers with a grain dryer. We're up here, just about every big farm has a grain dryer in the yard. It's just standard practice up here. If you get rigged up for it, it's not that bad. You know, you can handle the challenges. And, you know, you get your machinery with tracks on it for the wet falls and crop lifters. And we're very capable of harvesting in the spring. We've done it many times successfully. It's not fun, but we know we can do it. And I've actually sometimes, I've done better off in the spring combining than I have in the fall, because in the fall it's been too wet and it's mucky and you can't get the combines through and the grain is tough and the elevators don't want it. And you combine in the spring and it delays your seeding, yes, but we've gotten to the point where we know which crops will winter better. So if we have to make that decision, it's just part of your management plan up here. You just have to be prepared for it.
I really appreciate your can-do attitude. So you're kind of at the leading edge in terms of the varieties that you're getting, and you kind of see where seed breeding is going. And I'm curious, like as much as you can share, what are sort of the traits that are mostly being pushed? Like obviously probably yield is one, but is it on the disease front? Is it on growth patterns? Like, where are sort of the developments that the seed companies are going?
I think it depends on your crop. With canola, clubroot is a big issue nowadays, so everything's being bred for that. Oil content in canola as well. And the earlier, the better. Canola, you got your short season, your mid season, and your long season canola. And up here, we are short or mid. We don't grow very many long season varieties. We just, it's too risky. The odd person will, but it's a chance they're taking. On the cereal side, it's always yield, but it depends. You know, if you're going for a malt barley, you know, they're looking for the right kind of protein profile. A variety that has always good germination, plumpness of kernels. You know, milling wheat is the same. You know, there's certain aspects they want for milling, so they're bred for that. But then there's also like the disease pressures. Wheat, for example, you know, they are trying to get some different aspects into the wheat breeding to deal with fusarium and insects. There's some breeding to repel insects, but, you know, for us up here, that's really not too much of an issue. Yeah, so that's about all I can say about that. I mean, you know, yield is always number one on the farmer's mind, but for us in the Peace, getting early varieties has always been a big push for us anyways to get. And usually whenever you have an early variety, you're sacrificing a little bit of yield. But, you know, quality of, you know, especially in wheat, you know, high quality wheat, something that weathers a little bit better, during adverse fall conditions. You know, that's something that they're starting to breed in a bit more now.
And you mentioned obviously the differences in climate that we have in the Peace region versus on the prairies versus even further south in BC. What are some advantages of growing up here? I mean, I think something must keep you going, right? Despite we have shorter growing seasons and other things to deal with than other people in the south. But what is sort of our advantage and maybe something that the other regions are actually benefiting from seeds that's being produced up here?
Well, like I mentioned earlier, you know, we don't have fusarium, or there might be the odd pocket here and there, but they do testing every year, and fusarium is really not in the Peace to the extent that it is in southern Alberta, Manitoba, Saskatchewan. If we bring seed in from Saskatchewan, you know, I brought some oat seed in a couple of years ago. It all had to be heat treated and then chemically treated for fusarium, because that's just an issue they have, or we don't. We don't have a lot of the insects that the prairies do. Another advantage to the area is we are in the BC Peace anyways, as compared to a lot of the rest of the places in the prairies, our land is a lot more affordable. It's you can actually start farming up here and make a go of it. You go to central Alberta, southern Alberta, you know, you're $1 million for a quarter section. It's pretty hard to start farming with high priced land like that, where up here it's quite a bit more affordable. You know, it has its challenges, yes. You know, our freight rate to the ocean is cheaper than the prairies. A lot of people don't realize we are the closest elevator or grain source to Prince Rupert and Vancouver. So it's, I wish the CN would realize that a little bit better sometimes, but that's the way it goes. So we have some advantages to that point, but you know, we have good farming infrastructure here. There are lots of elevators and equipment dealerships. You know, we're a little further away from some fertilizer facilities, but all in all, it's a nice area, and you can start farming here and you can make it. You know, it's challenging. Don't get me wrong. It is challenging. This is a very prosperous area, because when things do work out, the land is productive. People have become very successful up here.
What are sort of your hopes for the future? Like, are you happy with the sort of the size you're at, or are you still looking at expanding or expanding the seed production versus your commercial production?
The seed and commercial production varies on the markets right now. Like, we've swung our farm quite a bit more into grass seed the last 2-3 years. We didn't grow any grass for about 8 or 9 years because the markets were not there, but now the markets have returned. So we're getting more into fescue and timothy production, some clovers, just because there's a good market there. There's a good price. The seed production, I think we're always going to kind of keep the same. For me, I enjoy being a seed grower. I've been involved in it for a long time. You know, we used to condition our own seed. We had our own seed cleaning plant, but we sold that a few years back. As it was too small, we either needed to upgrade or quit doing it altogether. So we just decided to shut down the seed plant for a few years. There's good municipal seed cleaning plants here. They're doing a good job, and they're all they're upgrading their equipment. You know, they're getting new technology in, color sorters, stuff like that. So that's really good for seed production. And color sorter, you can pick out a lot of that real fine stuff, that hard to separate stuff that traditional seed cleaning equipment can't do. And that's a big expense. That's hard for our farm to do that. Expansion is always on the table. I was kind of in a holding pattern for a couple of years until my son finished ag school, but he's purchased some of his own land now. He's I think he's actively gonna take over and start farming with us. So it's like anything, if good land comes up close to home, we jump on it. But you still have to be cautious. You can't overextend yourself. And we've seen that example several times. You know, big outfits have come in and they've gone. So you have to be careful in how you expand. But we're kind of happy with the size we are right now. We're about 6,000 acres in total. And that's enough for us, because one of the biggest issues with farming in the Peace, because we are so close to the oil field, mining, and forestry, is finding qualified help on the farm. It's very hard for us. So we utilize foreign workers that come over every summer from Switzerland, and because that's our heritage. So it's kind of get back to the roots a little bit, and we go that way. But yeah, we're happy with the size we're at right now.
Very cool. Now, you mentioned on the cereal side of things, you're also marketing. And if folks are interested, where would they find more information about you and your farming operation?
We are listed in the Alberta Seed Guide. So any variety you're interested in, all the listings are in there. A lot of my selling is just word of mouth. You know, repeat customers give me a call every year and what do you have? You know, I have customers all over the Peace Country, Alberta and BC side. You know, I have customers up in Alaska that I deal with every year. It's interesting. If I got some new varieties and it's a little harder to sell them because people aren't familiar, you know, we can put some I put ads out in the paper or talk to other seed growers because the seed grower network in the BC and Alberta piece anyways, we're a fairly tight-knit group and we know what everyone else is looking for. So if they don't have something, I might have it and vice versa. So we try to support each other and we're not overly competitive with each other. We all want to see each other succeed and keep the seed industry going.
Yeah, like you mentioned, you amalgamated with Alberta because it is a small group remaining and you want to make sure everybody can still prosper. And it sounds like there is room for who's in there, right? Like it doesn't seem like...
Yeah, there's lots of opportunity. Anyone wanting to grow seed can buy a membership in CCAN and get some registered or foundation seed and become a seed grower. It's not as onerous as people think. You don't have to be a multi-generational farm to become a seed grower. Anyone who has the interest and the time and the talent to do so, we welcome new members. It's not that hard. Like I'm involved with a private seed company, so I grow mostly their varieties. But there are public seed companies that anyone can access, or someone else can buy into another private company as well and start producing their seed. So there's lots of room for opportunity up here.
Yeah, I heard the same in the forage seed production as well, that they said, yeah, we're certainly welcoming new producers if they're out there. I was just wondering, on the forage seeds that you're producing, are those mostly for turf production?
Your fescues will be turf production, but a lot of the brome and the timothy, that'll be for forage livestock production. And so we actively have timothy, you know, pedigreed timothy right now, pedigreed fescue. We've grown pedigreed clovers and brome. Tried trefoil for a few years. That was a challenge. Yeah, there's great opportunities for the grass seeds as well. It's a little different marketing, and it's a way for us to spread out our workload because the grass seed, I've had timothy fields in production for 20 years in a row. So you have to learn how to manage that land. We actually had to work it up because the trees were growing back up again. So, but we had 20 years of seed production in a row. You know, only pedigreed after 7 or 8 years, your pedigreed, you're not allowed to have pedigreed production, but it can still produce common seed.
Yeah, talk about quite different than an annual crop. You mentioned the different spreading out your workload. How would sort of a season go for you in terms of, you know, what needs to come first and then who gets priority when?
Okay, well, like in the spring, we'll try to seed our wheat and our canola first, our peas, you know, pedigreed peas. You try to get them in as quick as you can. That comes up, you do your spraying. Once seeding is just about done, you have to just about shut down and fire up the sprayer and go spray all your forage grasses because they're ready to spray. So it is a challenge that way. You have to be able to juggle everything. Yeah, then you spray your cereals, your oil seeds. Then you have about 2-3 weeks where you can maybe actually enjoy life a little bit. And then the grass seed comes along and, mid to late July, you'll be starting to swath your fescues. About 2 weeks after that, you'll be swathing your timothy. Those crops, some guys have tried straight cutting, but not very successfully. So pretty much all your grass seed is swathed. If things go right, all that harvesting will be done before your cereal, like your early barleys and your oats and stuff like that, will be ready. So it does spread, you know, we'll start combining first week or second week in August, and we'll combine right till end of October into November. But if we had it all grain production, it's we've tried that a couple times where we've tried to do 4,000 or 5,000 acres of grain, and if you have a bad fall, it's very challenging. So the grass seed does spread out the workload, spreads out the risk. It's been a good fit for our farm. As I said earlier, the markets are good now, so it does pay. There was several years there where the grass seed markets were very poor, and it didn't pay.
Yeah, that's part of staying profitable, right? You got to go where the market tells you. Is there anything else you'd like to share about seed production in general or just agriculture in the Peace region, how you see it?
Overall, thoughts on seed production? I mean, I've always enjoyed it because it's forced me to be, I wouldn't say a better farmer, but I have to manage things differently. I have to manage my weeds, my rotation, you know, what varieties I grow where, because like with breeder plots, like I said before, I got to have 5 years free of any other cereal to grow another cereal plot. So I have to really think ahead, okay, what am I going to grow and where? So it really forces you to watch your rotation, manage your rotation, really keep control of your weeds, you know, because we grow a lot of pedigreed oats. So you really have to keep on top of your wild oat control. So it's forced me to, not that I'm a better farmer, but I have to try harder. I have to make sure things are better. And it is nice being part of the associations I've been a part of, being involved. You know, I've gone all across this country, just about in every province, going to seed grower meetings and just meeting other seed growers from Quebec and from the Maritimes and from Ontario, where the challenges we have seem astronomical to them, but then I hear their challenges and I wouldn't know how to tackle them. When you get to corn and soybeans, that's a different world to us. So I've met some excellent people. Seed growers are usually very, very active and knowledgeable growers, and very involved and very invested in their communities. So we've met some excellent people and had some great learning opportunities being a seed grower for the last 30, 40 years.
That's amazing. From listening to you, it sounds definitely like you have to be quite a precise producer and really have that sort of, you got to plan a lot and sketch it out a lot. You can't just kind of do your thing as things go.
Because, you know, once you harvest, you have to know what's in each bin. We got to have traceability on all of our product that we have, you know, so we have a quality assurance manual. You know, we have a lot of other steps that the average commercial producer doesn't have to do. It forces you to really know your numbers, know what you're producing, know what the market wants ahead of time. So you have to talk to a lot of different customers and different producers and find out what they're looking for. What do they need in their farms, and what can I grow to fill that niche? So it's a challenge. It's a lot of extra work sometimes, but sometimes it's beneficial, not always, but that's what we aim for.
But that's probably also what makes it interesting. Like, I could see that for the right type of person, this could be a real, real fun thing to do, real intriguing.
Yeah, I mean, you have to have the desire to do it, because there's sometimes it doesn't work out. But I don't know, we've done it long enough where it doesn't seem that onerous for us anymore. Like I said, you know, it forces you to know your operation a bit better and try to do a little bit better than the average commercial production. So.
Well, I certainly appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule and, you know, the little bit of downtime that you do have. So thanks for sharing a bit of insight on your operation and seed production specifically.
Yeah, no, not a problem.
Welcome back. I hope you found some neat information in this chat with Dave. Be sure to check out his farm and latest offering of seeds that might be available for purchase. I certainly learned a lot more about the process of annual grain seed production. Next up in our final episode of season one is a chat with Nordic Vale Honey, where we'll talk all about honey and bees. Bees and their work as pollinators are invaluable, and Peace Vale Honey will share a little bit about their honey producing business. Stay tuned for a very sweet episode, if you catch my drift. If you found value in this or other episodes of our Knowledge for Resilience series, please share, whether it's your friend, your farmer friend down the road, or family across the pond. You can find us on various podcast platforms such as Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, and of course, our partner association websites. Wherever you tune in from, make sure you like, subscribe, and follow us so you never miss another episode. Funding for this project was provided by the BC Hydro Agricultural Compensation Fund. Thank you so much for making this project possible and supporting local agriculture in the Peace and beyond. For feedback or any suggestions you might have, please email us at coordinator@peaceforage.bc.ca. Until next time, stay informed, stay resilient.